almost cruelly, his sex pumping between her damp thighs. A sweet, evil laughter was bubbling out of her. He shut his eyes as he thrust against the light little fount. The pain in his chest was bad, but he wasn't dying. He slumped in a small wooden chair near the bed. It was all he could manage to slowly button his shirt. "Medicine," she said. He rose. He could delay no longer. He found Malenka still crouching in the corner of the sitting room. "My dear, listen to me," he said. "I want you to go out with me, lock the door, and stand guard." She was staring past him. He turned around and saw Cleopatra in the door. The girl recoiled, whimpering. "Don't be afraid, she won't hurt you." Malenka was too terrified to listen or obey. Her piteous cries grew louder. Cleopatra's blank face had changed to a mask of rage. She came towards the helpless woman, who stared at the naked bones in her hands and in her foot. "She's only a servant girl," said the Earl, reaching out for Cleopatra's arm. She slapped him, knocking him backwards. Then she lunged at the woman, grabbing her by the throat and forcing her down on her knees as she had done to Henry only hours before. Then came that sound, that unspeakable sound. The girl was dead. Cleopatra had broken her neck. "Why did you do it?" he whispered. Almost innocently she stared at Elliot. Then she looked back at the dead woman. "Tell me, Lord Rutherford, how did I come to be here? Where did I come from? Lord Rutherford!" She bent forward, her eyes growing wide and full of terror. "Was I dead?"
"Ramses brought you here. Ramses! You called out to him. You saw him. Ramses has the medicine. I shall bring it back here."
"Go, get the medicine."
3 hours, he said to her. "Bolt the door after me."
She turned and looked at the door. She nodded. But she did not bolt the door. She went back into the bedchamber. She opened the magazine called Harper's Weekly and looked at the drawings of pretty women in dresses that pinched them in the middle, like insects. She needed a dress, a hat for her head, and sandals. Quickly, she searched the bedchamber and found them in a wooden closet. Here also were two little silk garments made for hands. Perfect. They hid the naked bones completely. As she opened the front door of the house, she glanced over at the dead body. Something, what was it? She had to understand it, but it simply would not come clear to her. "No, do not weep again. Do not struggle to grasp it." She hurried out, without closing the door. The sun felt so good to her. The sun. In a flash, she saw it flooding down from a high portal in a cave. Then it was gone, the memory. If ever it had been a memory. "Wake, Ramses." That was his name. But she didn't care now. She was free to roam, free to discover, to see. In a daze, Elliot walked into the lobby of Shepherd's. "Father, thank God you're here."
"Where's Ramsay?" Elliot stopped Alex abruptly. "I must talk to him at once."
"Don't you know? They're searching for him all over Cairo. He's wanted for murder, Father, both here and in London. Seems a man was found dead with an ancient Egyptian coin on him." Julie's beside herself.
"Son," he murmured, "I have to find Samir."
"Oh, you're in luck. He's just come in."
Elliot drew Samir aside. "I have to see Ramsay," he whispered, "or get a message to him."
Samir started to walk away.
"Tell him I have her. Tell him that the sun helped her, and so did the medicine in the vial."
The Earl drew out the empty vial and put it in Samir's hand.
"He will understand."
Ah, such a bazaar. Everything was for sale here. Rich fabrics, perfumes, spices, and strange ticking devices with Roman numbers on them. Jewelry and pottery and food. Suddenly, a monstrous sound shook her, and she looked up, on the verge of screaming. She stumbled forward, realizing in her panic that those around her were not frightened. What she beheld filled her with a nameless dread. Immense, black, it moved forward on wheels made of metal, a chimney atop it belching smoke. The monstrous thing rolled past her and entered a great yawning tunnel in which hundreds crowded as if trying to get near to it. She sobbed aloud, staring at it. She felt herself turning inward, away from all of it, back into the darkness from whence she'd come. When she opened her eyes, a young Englishman stood over her. He had his arm around her and was lifting her. He was very pretty. She loved the fresh, new skin of his face and throat. Lord Rutherford was a fine-looking man for certain, but this one had the beauty of youth. "Come," he said in English. "Come with me." An alleyway. She led him back, turned around, and slipped her arms under his. He bent to kiss her. It was over too quickly. She shuddered, as if she held on to him, her body clamped to him, her arms wrapped around his neck. She could not coax him any more. She studied him for a few seconds. Then she reached up, took a firm hold of his head with both her hands, and twisted it until his neck broke. He stared off, nothing in his eyes, nothing. Then he slipped down the wall, his legs wide apart. Again there was that nagging sense of a mystery, something to do with what she'd just done. She remembered that dim figure standing over her. Had it been a dream? "Rise, Cleopatra. I, Ramses, call you." Ah, no. Merely trying to remember caused a searing pain in her head. She gave a dull groan as she stood there, leaning against the wall, looking down at the dead boy. She bent over and slipped the money out of the boy's coat. Other things here as well. Two small bits of stiff paper with Aida written on them, and opera. Surely these were worth taking. She stepped over the dead boy and walked out again, into the noisy street. Be not afraid. Do as they do. But there came one of those shrill blasts from the iron chariots. She covered her ears, crying in spite of herself.
"Can I help you, little lady?"
She allowed the fine man to take her arm, another young one with smooth, lovely skin. They arrived together at the hideout Samir had arranged. Samir, Julie, and Ramses.
"Sire, I have a message for you," Samir said. "It's from the Earl of Rutherford. He said that I must tell you that he has her."
Samir removed the glass vial from under his robe and gave it to Ramses.
"He wants a meeting with you. He has given me the time and place."
"Ramses, tell us what all this means," Julie said. "I need you. And when I tell you, I may lose you. You will never lose me. I have done the unspeakable. I took the elixir to the museum. I poured it over her. Bleeding, wounded, she stood upright. She called my name." Ah, she liked this one, who called himself an American. She liked racing over the road in the open motor car, the wind whistling past her. To see the houses flying past, to see Egyptians trudging with their donkeys and camels, and to leave them in a spray of gravel. She adored it. But suddenly, that horrid, shrill sound caught her off guard.
"Don't be frightened, little lady, it's just a train."
Would she never get away from those hideous things? She caught her breath. Far away to the left, on the horizon, she saw the pyramids of Giza. She gave a little cry. This was Egypt. When had it been that she had come here, a small girl, and then with Ramses later? Ramses. The dark waters rushing over her again.
"Come on, let's get out and see it."
She smiled at the chubby-faced American. Sweet young mouth. She kissed him suddenly. I tried to fight them, Ramses said. It was impossible. There were simply too many. They took me away to jail. It must have been a half hour before I managed to escape. Julie buried her face in her handkerchief.
Sire, Samia said gently, you knew this elixir could do such a thing?
Yes, I knew. But listen, both of you, Ramses said. Cleopatra is only part of this tragedy. The Earl knows the secret now. It is the elixir itself that is dangerous, more dangerous than you know. Julie looked steadily at Ramses. If the secret fell into the wrong hands, whole regions of the earth could be rendered immortal, she said slowly. Whole peoples, Ramses answered. I knew the danger. I watched my love die rather than give the elixir to her lover, Mark Antony. And now, I have brought her back to life. Cleopatra and the American stood in a dark tunnel high up on the pyramid. She plunged her hand down under his leather belt to the root of his sex. He moaned against her. Suddenly his whole body stiffened. He was staring down at her naked leg, her foot, at the great strip of bloody bone exposed in her leg, at the fan of bones in her feet. A low growl of rage and hurt broke from her. Take your eyes off me, she screamed in Latin. You will not look at me in disgust. She grabbed his head with both hands and spit at him, and then the simple little twist. And he was dead, too. She bent down now, took the American's money and the keys to the motor car. It is not the same woman you once loved, Julie was saying.
She knew me. She recognized me.
Ramses, the brain in that body knew you. But our intellects, our souls, go on to higher realms, or they cease to exist altogether. This thing is a monstrous twin of your lost love.
This could be true, Samia murmured. If you give her more of the drug, you may only be revitalizing a demon.
You are truly immortal, my beloved, Julie said. But Cleopatra has been dead for 20 centuries. She is still dead. The thing you resurrected must be destroyed. The body of the dancing girl had begun to rot. The pain in her feet was bad. So was the pain in her side. Suddenly she heard a knock. She opened the door at once. I have waited a long while for you, Lord Rutherford. You have brought the elixir to me? She felt angry. Why was he staring at her like that? Where's Ramses? She demanded. Why does he not come?
Be patient, Lord Rutherford said. He will come.
Tell me where to find him, she screamed. I will tell you a secret, Lord Rutherford. You are weak, all of you, and I like killing you. It soothes my pain to watch you die. She rushed at him, grabbing him by the throat. But strong hands laid hold of her. She saw the blue-eyed man standing before her. Yes, this was Ramses. She ran at him with her hands out.
Get out! Ramses shouted to the other. Get away from here!
With all her strength, she fought him, seething with rage. She saw his hand go up. She tried to duck, but the blow caught her and she fell back. Why did he look like that? Why did he weep?
Cleopatra, he whispered. Is it really you?
Kiss me. Take me, she said. He held her captive suddenly, his mouth clamped to her, tongue stroking the nipple, pulling on her with the ferocity of a suckling child. Moaning, she rocked back and forth. Her moaning was like singing. Did that soothe the pain? Only slowly did she lower her eyes and see the shining vial in his hand.
Drink it.
She did. A great lovely vibration shook her from the roots of her hair to her toes. She closed her eyes and then opened them and saw him staring at her in astonishment.
I am whole, Ramses. I am whole. Hold me, she whispered.
On the tingling flesh where the wound had been, he kissed her, his mouth open, his tongue licking her.
No, into me, fill me, she cried. I am whole.
She went limp in ecstasy, her head thrown back, her eyes closed. Elliot dragged his left foot like a cripple, drawing ever closer to the hotel. Had he been a coward to leave? Ramsay had said go. He approached the front steps of Shepherd's. He did not see the two men who stopped him until they were blocking his path. Lord Rutherford? They were from the governor's office. There are some questions we must ask you. Had she been this beautiful when she was alive? She did a little dance. I can't die now. Isn't that true? You turned away from me while I was dying. You let them pull the shroud over my face. No, I never did that. You don't remember.
You let me die.
I wanted you to be with me.
Where is Antony?
Oh, but she knew. She turned away. Antony was dead and gone, laid in the tomb. And he would not give the magic to Antony. It was all there again. Cleopatra, look at me, he said. She rushed at him, kicking at him, clawing at his eyes. She raised her knee, jamming him hard between his legs. Through the courtyard she raced. She reached the motor car and roared out of the small alleyway and onto the main road. The front lounge at Shepherd's. Lord Rutherford, we are now dealing with several murders. Clearly the stabbing in London was only the beginning. Now we must ask for your full cooperation. These two young men murdered this afternoon. I have told you I know nothing about it. What is it you want from me, young man? My lord, let me speak to you candidly. I know of your close relationship with the Stratford family, but do you think Henry Stratford could be connected to these killings? He knew this man in London, the one who was stabbed. As for the American found out at the pyramids, the fellow had been robbed of quite a good deal of money. Now, we know Stratford had his ups and downs with regard to money. Elliot held his gaze without speaking, pinning it on Henry. That had not occurred to him. My lord, there's even more to it than that. The mummy stolen from the Cairo Museum, but it seemed the mummy's been stolen from Miss Stratford's house in Mayfair, too. A bit of priceless Egyptian jewelry was found in the possession of Henry Stratford's mistress, a Daisy Banker. You see, Lord Rutherford, we might be looking for the wrong man. What was Ramsay doing at the museum? Trying to stop Henry, Elliot murmured. But none of this makes sense. Well, it makes a hell of a lot more sense now than it ever did before, Elliot said. Poor Henry, poor mad, doomed Henry. Gorgeous garments. Dresses she could love, for they had the old softness to them and the old simplicity, and they were threaded through and through with silver and gold. She came up to the brightly lighted window and placed her hand on it. She went to the door, tapped.
Please, that dress, she said.
She opened the bag and withdrew a great handful of the money. Of course, my dear, said the proprietress. It was an absurd story. Henry breaking into the Museum of Antiquities to steal a mummy in order to pay his debts. But the truth was even more absurd. He rang his old friend, Pitfield, as soon as he reached the suite.
Ah, Gerald, I'm sorry to interrupt your dinner. It seems I'm in a bit of legal trouble here. I think Henry Stratford's mixed up in it. Ah, wonderful, Gerald. I knew I could count on you.
He looked up to see Alex coming through the door.
Father, thank God you're back. They've confiscated our passports. Julia's frantic.
Alex, he said, Gerald Pitfield will have your passports back for you before morning, and you and Julie are to be on the train.
Father, who is responsible?
Son, it looks as if Henry may be deeply involved.
This had been an exquisite choice. Pale green satin with pearl buttons and layers of Brussels lace. The gown for the opera ball was a lovely creation, too. The proprietress had almost finished her figures, as she called them. She had counted out many bills from the cash register. Cleopatra laughed. Heaps of money. She rose from the chair and walked delicately towards the woman. She took hold of the woman's throat before the poor creature so much as looked up. She tightened her grip, pressing her thumb right on the tender bone in the middle. Snap. Dead. She piled the boxes, one atop another, and carried them out and heaved them into the rear seat of the car. She headed fast for the place where all the best people stay. Shepherd's. She gave a deep laugh when she thought of the American and his strange way of talking to her, as if she were an idiot. And the merchant women had been the same. Maybe at Shepherd's she would meet someone of charm and graceful manners, someone more interesting than all these miserable souls whom she had sent into the dark waters from whence she'd come. Yes, she liked Shepherd's. She knew it already. She walked serenely up the carpeted stairs. A servant scrambled to retrieve her many packages.
"Would you be so kind," she said carefully, "I would like to have lodgings here."
Wait. Some feet away from her, she spied Lord Rutherford. No mistake, it was he. And an exquisite young man was with him, a tall, slender creature of porcelain features, who made her earlier companion seem quite crude.
"That's Lord Rutherford, miss,"
said the helpful young man beside her. "Yes, I know," she said. "But the beautiful one, who is he?"
"His son Alex, miss, the Viscount Summerfield. They're frequent guests of Shepherd's, friends of the Stratfords. Lawrence Stratford, the great archaeologist, the one who just made the discovery of the Ramses tomb."
She went to him the moment he was alone. Lord Rutherford was a man of considerable charm, but this one was so young that his skin was still petal soft. And yet he was tall, and his shoulders strong and straight, and he had a clear, confident look in his brown eyes when he turned to her.
"The young Viscount Summerfield," she said. "Son of Lord Rutherford, I am told."
A great flash of a smile.
"I'm Alex Saverill, forgive me. I don't believe I've had the pleasure."
"I'm hungry, Viscount Summerfield. Won't you show me to the banquet room of the hotel? I should like something to eat."
"I'd be delighted. What an unexpected pleasure. Would you mind terribly telling me your name? I know we've not been properly introduced, so we must introduce ourselves, it seems."
"My name is Cleopatra, Queen of Egypt."
"Oh, I could almost believe you. You look like a queen. May I call you Your Highness?"
Through the dark mirror on the panelled wall, Elliot saw the men from the governor's office withdraw. Pitfield came directly back and took his chair opposite.
"What in God's name has happened to young Stratford?"
Elliot asked.
"Astonishing. Some belly dancer, Henry Stratford's mistress, found her dead, neck broken in the garden of the house she was sharing with Henry. All Henry's things were there, passport, money, everything."
Elliot swallowed.
"Just what I was afraid of. He was going out of his mind with guilt."
"Over the gambling?"
"No, over Lawrence. It was Henry, you see, and the poisons in the tomb."
"Good Lord, man, are you serious?"
"Gerald, he admitted the killing."
"To you?"
"To Ramsay."
"Ramsay? The one they're searching for?"
"Yes. Ramsay is entirely innocent, you see. He went to the museum to reason with Henry."
You know this for a fact.
Ramsay had tried to reason with Henry earlier, and off he went to find him again, for Julie's sake.
Julie and this Ramsay, they're here?
Yes. The engagement's off with Alex. It's all quite amicable. Alex and Ramsay are friends, and the whole thing must be straightened out.
Yes, but Henry himself, have you any idea where he could be?
Elliot shuddered. No, he said. No idea at all.
Young Lord Summerfield, she said, gazing at his beautiful mouth, let us banquet in my rooms and leave this place to be alone there. He paused as they entered the long sitting room, with rich hangings and chairs that looked for all the world like giant cushions.
Why, you are the strangest creature, so out of this world.
She reached out and caressed his face and slowly kissed him. His brown eyes were troubled suddenly, but then he kissed her back, and the sudden fire surprised and thrilled her. For this night, Lord Summerfield, she said, this is my palace, and now we must go and seek the royal bedchamber. Julie's suite. Slowly she took the pins out of her hair, gazing absently in the mirror. Suddenly she realized that a tall Arab in white robes was standing in the corner of her room. Her Arab, Ramses. Silently he enclosed her, pressing her to himself. Where is she?
I don't know, he said in a defeated voice. I have lost her.
You must tell me what's happened.
His expression broke her heart. In a tremulous voice she said, you gave her more of it. Don't judge me. She is alive as I am. I brought her back. Let me judge myself. I'll find her and I will undo this awful error. Trust me when I say that I shall find a painless way, for that I must do before more innocent blood is shed.
The quiet of the night. Alex Saverell lay naked and asleep on the snow-white sheets of the soft feather bed. Tenderly she stroked his hair. Her hand moved down and touched the tender bones she had broken in others. She didn't want him to know death. She didn't want him to suffer. A great protective mist rose in her. She felt the hardness between his legs. She wanted it to fill her again. She smiled. If one cannot be immortal, one should at least be young. Ramses walked through the sand, his garments blowing, until he came to the giant sphinx. He looked up at the disfigured face. He thought back to the age when he had come here in pilgrimage. He heard cymbals, drums, incantations. He made his own prayer now. God of my fathers, of my land, look on me with forgiveness. Teach me what I must do to give back to nature what I have taken. I am no god. I know nothing of creation and little of justice. Her eyes were open when the first rays of sun pierced the curtains. How beautiful it looked, the great arms of the sun god reaching out to touch her. Tingling warmth, a sudden great breath of well-being. She stood at the window looking over the square to the great silver glare of the river. In the catacombs it had begun. The old priest had told the tale.
It is an old legend. My father's father told it to him. I have seen him with my own eyes, the sleeping king. Yet you must be aware of the danger.
13 years old. She did not believe in such a thing as danger. She had gone ahead of the old priest. She read the Greek aloud. Here lies Ramses the immortal, called the damned, for he cannot die, and sleeps eternally, awaiting the call of the kings and queens of Egypt. There on the altar, a giant shriveled being, withered limbs crossed on his breast, brown hair wisps about his skull. You poor fool, he is dead. The dry air here preserves him.
No, Majesty. See the shutter high above and the chains hanging. It must be opened now.
Ramses the Great, rise. A queen of Egypt needs your counsel.
So beautiful, he had whispered. The bedroom of Shepherd's Hotel was awash in blinding light.
Ramses, I remember. What have you done to me?
The light was all around her. She went down on her knees, her hands on the warm green rug. She lay down, tossing and turning, trying to push away the fierce power that penetrated her brain, penetrated her heart. A great pulsing vibration had caught her entire form. She floated in space, and finally lay still in the great vibrating drift, the hot light blanketing her skin, an orange fire against her eyelids. It was late morning before her young lord finally awoke. Rome had fallen, and 2,000 years had passed. Take your breakfast, young lord, she said. There are so many things I must discover, so many things I must see. I'll show you everything, your highness.
So beautiful. You and all of life. It's everything and nothing. So beautiful.
You're crying.
Yes. But I'm happy. Stay with me. The opera tonight, my lord. Shall we go together?
That would be heaven.
Tell me what this is.
Why, a newspaper, he said, half laughing. They've got a picture of Ramsay with Julie. He's a dear friend of my father and me. Some foolishness about stealing a mummy from the Cairo Museum. There's nothing to it, really, your highness.
She stared at this picture. Don't bring the world to us just yet, she whispered. Forget the picture. Forget all of it. He was hers now. Forget Ramses in the clothes of modern times.
Yet she picked up the newspaper as they went into the bedroom.
Tell me, she said, pointing to the picture, who is that woman beside him?
Julie. Julie Stratford.
Ramsay was at his best, evincing that easy charm that had subdued everyone on the voyage out.
I tried to reason with him. When he broke the case and removed the mummy, I realized it was hopeless. I tried to get out, but the guards, well, you know the story.
Gentlemen, Gerald said, you know very well that this man's innocent. It's Henry. It's been Henry all along. He broke into the Cairo Museum, stole the mummy, sold it for profit, went on a drunken rampage for the money. You found the mummy wrappings in the belly dancer's house.
But the whole story is so...
Elliot motioned for silence.
Ramsay has been subjected to enough. He's already made the crucial statement that Henry confessed to the murder of his uncle.
He made this very plain to me, Ramsay said dryly.
And so off they were going now, through the crowded lobby of Shepherd's, to drive in his Rolls-Royce, to see the Mamluk tombs and all the history that she'd asked about. Let me just leave word at the desk for my father that we'll see him tonight.
Tell me, she said as he helped her in the front seat, about this Julie Stratford.
Ramsay was still arguing as the car pulled into the drive before Shepherd's. We are going to the opera and the ball, Elliot said. We will do everything society expects of us. And then Julie and Alex and I will return to London immediately. You will have the rest of eternity to search for your lost queen.
He stopped suddenly.
Good Lord, look at that. My son driving off with a beautiful woman.
They walked through the city of the dead. She wanted to see no more the ancient ruins. She wanted only to be with him. I like you, young lord, she said to him. You comfort me. You make me forget my pain and the scores I must settle. So fragile, all of you. She lifted her hand to his cheek, touched it tenderly. But who are you? Where did you come from? He whispered. He took her hand and kissed it. A faint ripple of passion softened her all over. I'll never hurt you, Lord Alex. Regina, he whispered, my queen. She saw Antony again, dead on the couch.
Your Majesty, we should take him away now.
Hold me, Lord Alex. Keep me warm. Through the streets of old Cairo, Ramses walked alone. How could he persuade Julie to get on that train? How could he let her go back to London? But then, was it not best for her? And mustn't he think of that for once? Had he not caused evil enough? And what about his debt to the Earl of Rutherford? This much he owed the man who had sheltered Cleopatra, the man for whom he felt a deep and uncertain affection that might just be love. His thoughts gave out in confusion. Destroy the elixir. The authorities didn't know what to make of any of it, finally. They had issued a warrant for Henry's arrest, but frankly, at this moment, everything pointed to the possibility that the bastard was dead. This whole grisly case might never be solved. Cleopatra stood at the window. She had dressed in the gorgeous gown of pure silver she'd taken from the poor woman in the little shop. Ropes of pearls fell down over the swell of her breasts. Her hair hung down about her, moist still from the bath, and full of perfume. It made her smile bitterly to think it was like being a girl again. Running through the palace gardens, her hair, her cloak. We may use these tickets, may we not? She picked out the pair she'd stolen from the poor dead boy in the alleyway. But I want you to meet my father.
Of course you do, and I shall, soon enough. We shall see them when it suits us. Please, let me have a chance to see your lost love, Julie Stratford, from a distance.
Another modern palace, the opera house, swarming with bejeweled women in gowns the colors of the rainbow, and the men beside them, elegant, in black and white. She watched the great surge up the grand staircase. Lord Summerfield beamed at her with pride and affection.
You are the queen here, he whispered.
He turned to one of the merchants peddling strange little instruments, the purpose of which she couldn't guess. Opera glasses and the program.
But what are they?
He gave a startled little laugh.
You did fall from heaven, didn't you?
Chimes sounded. They moved up the stairs together. She did love him. Julie Stratford had been a fool not to love him. Alex led her down the little steps to the front row of the small section, to the soft red chairs at the railing. Across the dimly lighted gulf, she saw Ramses and the pale-faced woman with large, sad eyes. Julie. Lord Rutherford had settled directly behind them. She tried to take her eyes off them. She did not fully understand the tumult inside her as she continued to stare. Ramses put his arm around the woman as if to comfort her. Ramses kissed this woman, and she returned his kiss. How the pain passed through her as she saw this. It was like a knife traveling down her face, suddenly slicing her open. A hatred for the woman swelled inside her, burning her. Give Antony the elixir. Suddenly the theater went dark. They played in concert. The sound rose huge and searing and beautiful. Was she weeping? She did not want to hate. In memory again, she saw Ramses above her in the darkness. Had it been a tomb? She felt the elixir filling her mouth, and then he backed away from her in terror. Ramses! But was she sorry that he had done it? Could she curse him? She was alive. She peered at Ramses and Julie. The woman was crying. Suddenly, Julie Stratford whispered something to her partner. They rose. Julie Stratford hurrying through the curtain, Ramses following. I shall return, she whispered in Alex's ear. You stay here. Julie Stratford and Ramses talked in whispers which she could not possibly hear. He pleaded with her, but Julie Stratford was strong, just as she herself had been strong. Julie Stratford rose and walked away swiftly with her head bowed. She followed Julie Stratford. Thank God the powder room was empty. Julie sat down and rested for a moment, her hands covering her eyes. They were locked in the stupid auditorium, listening to music, as if horrors had not been committed. She had burst out with it. I wish I'd never laid eyes on you. I wish you'd let Henry kill me. Julie, he said, it was a horrible thing I did, but I'm speaking now of you and me. You're alive. You're whole and beautiful, soul and body united. Take the elixir and come with me forever. She'd broken away and run. As the door of the powder room opened, she looked up into the mirror. The woman directly behind her was staring at her with great, ferocious blue eyes, all her long, rippling black hair pouring down over her naked shoulders. A shock went through her. She couldn't hold her hand steady. Oh, you are lovely, yes, said the woman in a low voice. But he has not given you his precious elixir. You're mortal. Who are you? She gasped. But she knew. Young, delicate, like a flower, so easy to pick. It seems monstrous that I should pluck this flower, because what I loved was allowed to die. What have you to do with the loss suffered so long ago? Julie Stratford for Antony. It seems so unfair. God, help me, Julie gasped. The woman's hand flew towards her, grabbing her throat. Her head struck the mirror behind her, once, twice. She was losing consciousness. The hand suddenly let her go. Ramses! She screamed. Ramses! In a flurry of streaming black hair and shimmering silver cloth, she vanished. People shouting, hurried footsteps. An old woman with soft, wrinkled hands was helping her to her feet. Ramses came rushing towards her. She collapsed in his arms. She was there, she gasped in his ear. She touched me. Into the foyer of the box he led her. Elliot and Samir stood over her suddenly, and the music was a ghastly din pouring through the curtains. Dear God, she was like a terrible angel, a goddess. Ramses, she knew me, my name. She spoke of vengeance for Antony. His face was a mask of rage. He started for the door. She grabbed hold of him. No,
Don't go. Don't leave my side. She could have killed me. She wanted to, but then she couldn't. Ramses, she's a living, feeling creature. Oh, God, what have you done? What have I done?
A bell sounded within the auditorium. People were streaming out. Alex would be searching for her. She stood on the high iron balcony. The door opened to the lights and the noise. The city was a haze of soft lamps and rooftops, of shining domes and towers piercing the deep Asia sky.
Your Highness, I've been searching for you everywhere. Hold me, Alex, she whispered. Open your heart to me, he said earnestly. Tell me what's troubling you. I won't let anything hurt you. If it's in my power to stop it, I shall. I believe you, young lord.
What was it she wanted? Would revenge cure the rage? Then she realized something, and it was like the sun again, the warm sun, to love and to hate so fiercely. It was the essence of life itself, and life she had again, with all its blessings and all its pain. The last act of Aida was nearing the end. Elliot sat staring dully at the beautiful stage, the doomed lovers suffocating in the tomb, Amneris, the princess, praying above. Thank God, it was almost finished. Elliot and Samir had searched the crowds at the intermissions, looking for the woman whom only Elliot would recognize, but whom Samir could spot for her flowing hair and silver gown. She was nowhere to be found. The mystery was, how did she know about Julie? How had she found Julie here? They had not found Alex, either. He lifted his opera glasses and began scanning the hall. Alex, where are you? Grey heads, sparkling diamonds, mouths agape under white moustaches. And a gorgeous woman, with black, rippling hair over her shoulders, walking quickly down to the front row of the far box, her hand in Alex's hand. He froze. Don't have a heart attack now, Elliot. Alex turned and kissed the woman's cheek as she stared at the stage. Ramsay, he whispered. There, look. With Alex. It's she. He heard Ramses' low moan of distress. The last dying notes of the duet ended. Applause broke out. The house lights were rising. People were climbing to their feet.
What is it? Julie demanded.
They're leaving. I'm going after them, Ramsay said.
No,
Julie cried. Julie, she's with Alex Savarel. He was at the front doors when Elliot, Samir, and Julie came down the stairs. He had known that it was no good. As soon as he had reached the box, they were gone.
Our only chance, then, is the ball, Elliot said. Alex said he would meet us here or at the ball.
They had followed the flow of the guests, streaming out of the opera house and walking across the broad square to the hotel. The ballroom opened before them on the second floor. Gold draperies hung from the high-paneled ceiling. Couples had already begun to dance to the music.
Oh, I'm so eager for them to meet you, Alex said.
In a dream, she watched them. Alex pumping Ramses' hand, and Ramses staring at her.
My darling, let me present my father and my dearest friends. Why, Your Highness, I don't even know your real name.
Yes, you do, my beloved. It's Cleopatra.
Your father knows me, and so does your good friend Ramsay, as you call him. And I have met your friend Julie Stratford as well. Ramsay stepped forward suddenly.
I must speak to you, he said to her. Now, alone.
Let me go, she whispered as he pulled her away from the others. You think you can force me to do your will, but I am not your slave or your property. What you've brought back to life would be free to live.
It is you, he whispered. The queen who loved recklessly, but knew always how to conquer and to rule. She struggled to free herself.
You think I could ever forgive you for letting Antony die? When your sweet mortal Julie Stratford is lying dead at your feet, as Antony lay dead at mine, you'll know the power of she who always conquers and rules.
No, you won't hurt her. I'll put you back into the grave before I let you do it.
In sudden terror, she plowed through the crowd to the lobby and out the front doors. The car had just stopped at the foot of the steps. Alex was running down the staircase, and Ramses was right behind him. She slid behind the wheel and slammed her foot on the pedal. As the car raced forward, Alex vaulted over the side door and fell down into the seat beside her.
God in heaven! Alex shouted over the wind. He's taken the car behind us. He's following us.
Somewhere far out there lay the pyramids and then the open desert. But how could she hide there? Where would she go? Far off to the right, she saw a twinkling light moving. She heard that sound, that awful sound, the scream of the steam locomotive.
The brakes!
Alex cried. The motor car bumped, rose up in the air, and caught in a dead halt.
We're caught in the tracks, damn it! Come on, get out!
The whistle came again, screaming over the sound of iron rumbling. She felt Alex grab her arm and try to pull her out of the car seat. The hideous locomotive was on top of her. Her body was thrown upwards as a searing flash of orange fire rose under her. An endurable heat enveloped her with a great deafening roar, the like of which she had never heard before. Late afternoon. Elliot opened his eyes. The sun fell in slashes through the wooden blinds, the fan churning slowly overhead. He heard his servant open the door.
Your lordship, the Egyptian fellow's been by. Brought a bottle of medicine from Ramsay. Said you'd know what it was.
There was a note by the bottle. Lord Rutherford, it is now your decision. May your wisdom sustain you. May you choose the right path. Elliot put the flask in his inside pocket and went out. He made his way through the alleyways, aimlessly. He merely looked at things, walls and doors, and people's faces. He didn't linger long anywhere, except when he was very tired. Then he sat, and sometimes dozed. Cairo woke with the sun. The heat seemed to rise from the dirt streets themselves as the bazaar came to life. Elliot was thoroughly tired now, but still he walked past the brass merchants and the rug merchants and the sellers of fake antiquities, the sellers of mummies, who claimed to offer for a pittance the bodies of kings. Mummies. They stood along the whitewashed wall in the burning sunlight. Malenka's words came back to him.
My beautiful English, they wrap him in linen. They make him a king.
Nausea struck him as the merchant stepped forward. See the fine bones of this one. He was a great king. Come closer. Have a good look at him.
Slowly, Elliot obeyed. The face, the nose, and the broad plane of the forehead, the sunken eyes, the thin mouth. He was staring at the face of Henry Stratford. Henry, under that gauze forever. Henry, whom he had caressed in that little room in Paris a lifetime ago.
Come now, sir, don't turn your back on the mysteries of Egypt, sir.
The voice faded as he stumbled away. It hung over the rooftops, a great burning disk, the sun. Never taking his eyes off it,
He reached into his coat and pulled out the flask. He drank the contents in great easy gulps to the very last drop. He felt the heat in spasms. He felt his numb leg come to life. The great weight in his chest slowly melted, and stretching his limbs with the utter abandon of an animal, he stared, wide-eyed, at the glaring sky, at the golden disk. He gave a soft cry, a spontaneous expression of his joy. The morning sun broke in glorious rays through the round portal. Julie watched as Ramses filled the tumbler from the vial. Tiny lights danced in the strange liquid. He held it out to her. She took it from him, then looked into his eyes. The warm sun melted over her skin, and she smiled. She drank the tumbler down. "You are mine, Julie Stratford," he whispered. "My queen forever. And I am yours. Always yours." Then slowly, yet feverishly, they began to make love. The young doctor grabbed his bag and ran towards the infirmary.
"Just dreadful, sir. Burned to a crisp, sir, and wedged down there under the crates at the very bottom of the flat car."
What in God's name was he going to be able to do for her? Out here, this godforsaken outpost in the Sudan. The nurse shook her head.
"I don't understand it."
"Let me see her." He pulled back the mosquito netting. "Why, this woman's not burned at all." She lay asleep against the white pillow, her black wavy hair stirring in the sunlight. If ever he had seen a woman this beautiful, he couldn't remember it. As he came round the side of the bed, she opened her eyes. How remarkable that they should be so startlingly blue. "What a handsome man you are," she whispered. "Perfect British accent. One of us," he thought. "You gave us all quite a scare, you realize. They thought you were burned."
"Did they?" she whispered. "I was in some dark place where I couldn't scarce breathe. Help me up and out into the sunshine."
He followed her outside almost stupidly, taking her hand. There was nothing at all wrong with this woman. She looked up at the hot sky. "Is there someone I should contact?"
"I have friends, yes," she said almost dreamily. "And accounts to settle. But there's no great hurry to contact anyone."
She was lifting his hand, playing idly with his fingers.
"Tell me about yourself, doctor."
Did she want him to kiss her? He could scarce believe it. He bent to touch her lips. He couldn't stop himself. She clamped her mouth on his. In another second he would drag her to the bed if she wouldn't come of her own free will, but he knew she would. He lay down beside her, kissing her throat, running his hand over her breast. She was warm and fragrant and ready for him.
"My friends..."
Her voice dropped to a monotone as she stroked him, her nails deliciously grazing his shoulders.
"My friends can wait. We have time to see each other. All the time in the world."
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.